This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Monday, February 3rd.
Neither Staten Island Chuck, nor Punxsutawney Phil, nor Lamar Alexander saw their shadows yesterday, so we won't have any more winter, and we won't have any more impeachment testimony. Staten Island Chuck and Punxsutawney Phil declined to be interviewed. Lamar Alexander went on NBC's Meet the Press to explain why he will vote for no more witnesses, or really why he already voted for no more witnesses, and will vote to acquit President Trump, even though he believes Trump has been proven guilty as charged.
I think he shouldn't have done it. I think it was wrong. Inappropriate was the way I'd say improper, crossing the line. And then the only question left is, who decides what to do about that?
Well, who decides what to do about that?
The people. The people is my conclusion.
Lamar Alexander with Chuck Todd, the Meet the Press host. So there are at least two storylines here. One is the Democrats' disappointment that senators who are finding Trump guilty won't remove him from office. But the other is the growing number of Republicans who are suddenly now willing to publicly rebuke the president and say, no, your call was not perfect. The whole pressure campaign was anything but perfect. Another Republican senator saying that is Joni Ernst of Iowa, who went on CNN's State of the Union with Jake Tapper yesterday. The senator speaks first.
That's the president. It's probably something that I wouldn't have done, but focusing on corruption, absolutely.
He didn't mention corruption in that call, though, as you know. He just mentioned Joe and Hunter Biden and Burisma, and then he mentioned this conspiracy theory about Ukraine interfering in the election in 2016.
Right. So, again, probably not something that I would have done.
Joni Ernst on CNN. Now, the Adam Schiff pushback on that for today's closing arguments is something like he said yesterday on CBS Face the Nation.
I also think it's important that the Senate take the next step. Having found him guilty, if indeed that's what they have found, they need to remove him from office because he is threatening to still cheat in the next election by soliciting foreign interference.
Oh, Adam Schiff's getting that cold in his nose that I had for so long. But Schiff's argument about free to cheat again was not persuasive for Lamar Alexander.
Enduring an impeachment is something that nobody should like. Even the president said he didn't want that on his resume. I don't blame him. So if a call like that gets you an impeachment, I would think you would think twice before he did it again.
Alexander on NBC, and we heard something similar from Joni Ernst on CNN.
I think that he knows now that if he is trying to do certain things, whether it's ferreting out corruption there in Afghanistan, whatever it is, he needs to go through the proper channels.
Now, whether Trump is more chastened or more emboldened to behave badly remains to be seen. But the latest NBC News poll, to be fair, does put Ernst and Alexander in line with public opinion by a 10-point margin. People said they believe Trump is guilty of Article 1. He did abuse the power of his office. That was about a 50% to 40% poll result. By a 15-point margin, they agree he's guilty of Article 2. He did obstruct Congress. But is removal from office the proper punishment? Well, the respondents said no by a slim margin, 3 points, 49 to 46. But it does replicate the Lamar Alexander and Joni Ernst and other Republicans' position. So this is how impeachment will end in the final vote on Wednesday, barring something extremely unforeseen. And this is where impeachment meets Iowa. The Iowa caucuses are tonight. With me now, New York Magazine national correspondent Gabe DeBenedetti. He is in Des Moines, but besides covering the election campaign, he's following impeachment too. Hi, Gabe. Happy Iowa caucuses day. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, Brian. Hello from lovely Des Moines.
Why do you think Republican senators are unwilling to hear John Bolton, but are suddenly willing to say the president's behavior was wrong?
Well, I think a large part of it is what Lamar Alexander actually said, which is, I don't need any more witnesses to tell me it was wrong. They don't want to prolong this process. Clearly, it's been painful for a lot of them, but I think a lot of them also went into this whole process fairly clearly saying, listen, we're going to acquit the president one way or another, so let's just get this over with already. The idea of calling John Bolton or further witnesses to tell them, you know, what they are admitting at this point, they already know. It's sort of like, you know, for them, why bother?
We should acknowledge the two Republicans who did vote for more witnesses on Friday night, Mitt Romney and Susan Collins. Why do you think they broke with the pack?
Well, these are two who obviously have different incentives, and we can take them at an individual basis. You know, Mitt Romney is someone who doesn't really have a political future to worry about. He's, you know, been pretty clear that he probably won't run for re-election, though I'm not breaking any news here. He's quite old, and of course he's not up for re-election for another 6 years in a state that doesn't like Donald Trump very much, so he's trying to act independently. Susan Collins is someone who has expressed displeasure with the president but doesn't often break with him. She is up for re-election in Maine, and that's likely to be a very close race in November. You know, basically what they're both saying is neither of them is willing to say outright that the president, you know, deserves to be removed, certainly. But they were both just saying, you know, we need to hear a little bit more here. And they made some Democrats happy. But of course, that's not enough. They needed, you know, Democrats needed two more in order to, properly call witnesses.
And I don't want to linger on this, but a weird footnote, Collins and Romney voted for more witnesses in general. But in a separate vote, just on whether to call Bolton, even later Friday night, they fell back in line and voted no, don't call John Bolton. I don't understand it. Do you?
Well, I think partially the thinking was that this was a procedural vote, that it was already clear that Bolton was not going to be called. And because it was Chuck Schumer who was offering this, who's, of course, the minority leader in the Senate, there was never really much of a belief that this was going to happen. And they sort of felt like this was more of a messaging vote rather than a reality vote. So their thinking was basically like, we already know Bolton is not going to come and testify, so let's not go along with, you know, a message vote just for the Democrats' purposes.
Now, you're primarily covering the campaign. I wonder if all these sound bites the world now has of Republicans condemning the president's behavior does actually make it harder for him to solicit foreign interference for the rest of this year, or beyond that, becomes a meaningful campaign plank against him for whoever the Democratic nominee is. Abuse of power, obstruction of justice. Many Republicans agree, but said whether to reward that behavior is up to you, my fellow Americans. I can see the commercials now.
Yeah, that's actually a great question that I think a lot of the Democratic campaigns are wrestling with right now. Obviously, that's the kind of thing that is likely to come up a little bit more in the general election when Democrats are trying to do a bigger job of winning over Republicans or disaffected Republican voters, or at least moderate voters, and say there is a bipartisan consensus against this president. In the primary so far, even some folks in Iowa have been surprised by how little Democrats have gone out of their way to try and win over those kinds of voters. Obviously, it's a Democratic caucus focusing on Democratic voters, but there is a possibility for Republican voters to change their registration on caucus day. Pete Buttigieg talks a lot about future former Republicans, as he calls them, and trying to win them over. But there hasn't been a concerted effort from any of these people to talk in these terms right now, largely because there's so many of them so focused on winning over the Democratic base. And talking about Republican displeasure with the president is one thing, but it's sort of a, you know, preaching to the choir situation for a lot of these Democratic voters.
In a way, the president won, I think, by pretending that his pressure campaign was perfect. Because America was having that debate these last few months rather than the one that maybe it should have been having, which is the one about if it's bad enough for removal from office. I've said this many times on this show that, you know, that seemed to be the inevitable debate. But the behavior was proven back in early fall when the witnesses came forward in the first round of hearings, let's be real, and yet it didn't get past that until the last few days in terms of Congress. Now we see that Trump managed to put off that debate until it was too late. We needed weeks of public debate on that. And really, we got about 18 hours on Thursday and Friday. Any way to know if that was a conscious strategy to minimize the most relevant debate?
Well, I think that one of the mistakes that a lot of folks make in trying to analyze the activity, particularly the messaging activity of the president and the White House, is putting too much, you know, imposing a lot of strategy retroactively on what they're doing. I think the president just said it was a perfect call because he believes it was a perfect call, and he thinks other people should believe that too. There's no doubt that he shifted the terms of the debate and, you know, is singularly able to do that, not only by dint of being the president, but because of who he is and the, you know, communicative abilities that he has, I suppose we should say. There are Democrats who, of course, wish that there could have been more of a conversation, as you said, about whether this rises to the level of removal from office. But I think the House managers and some of the senators who are trying to manage the way that Democrats are talking about this realized that they had to have one fight at a time and that they weren't able to really set the terms of the debate over and over. You know, Donald Trump is very good at setting the terms of the debate. And so they were trying to, you know, move it away from his terms, away from whether or not this was a perfect call. But they were successfully able to establish it was not a perfect call, as we've said, and that this is a problem. I think in an ideal world, surely they would be very happy to have the conversation about whether this rises to the level of removal. But they, to them, it's self-evident.
I want to touch on one more campaign subplot from yesterday before you go. Sure. Trump and Bloomberg and the Super Bowl. Now, they were the only two candidates who bought Super Bowl ads. They are the deepest pocketed candidates, Trump and Bloomberg. I read that Bloomberg's ad cost $10 million to be in halftime, so that's an indication. But here's one, an excerpt from one, that Trump ran at the start of the game about a criminal justice reform law that he signed.
I'm free to hug my family. I'm free to start over. This is the greatest day of my life. My heart is just bursting with gratitude. I want to thank President Donald John Trump. Woo!
Thank you.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Now, that message contrasts with what he said in 2017 about NFL players who called for criminal justice reform by silently kneeling during the national anthem.
Wouldn't you love to see one of these NFL owners, when somebody disrespects our flag, to say, get that son of a bitch off the field right now, out, he's fired. He's fired!
So by way of political analysis, Gabe, I guess we take the ad last night not as looking for black votes when he knows he'll get a tiny percentage. He runs so centrally on white grievance, but trying to make suburban swing voters comfortable enough on Trump and race to allow themselves to vote for him?
That's certainly part of it. And the other half of it is trying to just run down Democrats' margin among black voters. Potentially there might be some African-American voters who are, you know, feel conflicted or you know, on the margins might vote for Donald Trump. Obviously, as you said, this is a very, very marginal part of his overall appeal. So let's not read too much into it. But the fact that they paid a lot of money for a Super Bowl ad on this does tell you something about what he's thinking will matter when it comes down to the general election in 2020.
Bloomberg's ad was during halftime. It was about gun laws, one of his main issues. But knowing they would be competing during the Super Bowl, in a sense, right? The Super Bowl of political ads, as Trump and Bloomberg probably both saw it, Trump went after Bloomberg in a pregame interview with Sean Hannity.
Very little. I just think of little. You know, now he wants a box for the debates to stand on. Okay, it's okay. There's nothing wrong. You could be short. Why should he get a box to stand on, okay? He wants a box for the debates. Why should he be entitled to that? Really? Then does that mean everyone else gets a box?
Now, Bloomberg hit back first on Twitter saying Trump lied about Bloomberg wanting a box. So according to Bloomberg, he wasn't even being criticized for something real. It's just another thing that Donald Trump made up to have another attack line. And Bloomberg tweeted, he lies about everything, his fake hair, his obesity, his spray-on tan. That was the tweet. So Bloomberg got down there with him on physical characteristics, and then he said this later at an appearance.
He lies about everything, so it shouldn't be a surprise that he said things like that. I will stand on my accomplishments of what I've done to bring this country together and get things done. I've been doing it for a long time. I stand twice as tall as he does on the stage that matters.
So I don't know who's Pat Mahomes. I don't know who's Garoppolo. but what happened there?
I think a lot happened there. But I think one of the things that's really interesting is the fixation that Donald Trump has with Michael Bloomberg, who, of course, is not running in Iowa and certainly is not qualified for any debates and is not about to debate Donald Trump. But he has a fixation with Michael Bloomberg, which is very interesting. And it means that a lot of what Bloomberg is doing with these ads is working, if you ask him. If I may point out, it's pretty common for shorter candidates to have boxes during debates to stand on. It's not that weird, but that's obviously beside the point here. you're having this sort of shadow conversation happening while the actual Democratic primary is going on. And that reflects something pretty interesting, which is that we don't know what Michael Bloomberg's ultimate effect is going to be, especially, by the way, if Bernie Sanders wins Iowa, then wins New Hampshire. Bloomberg is sort of sitting there waiting to compete in the Super Tuesday states, and he has a reasonable claim right now to be inside Donald Trump's head in a way that none of the other Democratic candidates really do, even though, of course, this whole impeachment thing was ultimately about Trump's fixation with Joe Biden. So there's a lot happening right now, but the battle between two, you know, New York billionaires is certainly not what all the candidates running right now in Iowa want to be talking about.
And I think as I listen to the remark by Trump, that we should also take note, tell me if you think I'm reading too much into it, but that Trump was again playing to a sense of grievance against the people who are not his supporters being given a helping hand of any kind. It wasn't just that Bloomberg is short. It was that it's right. unfair that he would get a box to stand on. Like, the system won't give you a box to stand on. Only immigrants and African Americans and gay people and Michael Bloomberg. Right.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it, you know, is very typical of what Donald Trump's political message has always been, even though he's the president. It's that he's not being treated fairly and whatnot. And I think a lot of people who are, you know, trying to read into this are also reading the implication that he might not want to debate in the general election overall, which his campaign has obviously been talking about, as has been reported a few times now. You know, he's looking for an excuse to be able to say, I'm your president, and even then they're not treating me fairly because Michael Bloomberg gets a box to stand on. Now, this is all projection. It's not true. It's also not really reflected of, you know, any version of the reality that we know of. But yeah, here we are yet again.
Gabe DeBenedetti, national correspondent for New York Magazine in Des Moines. I know you have a really long day and tonight out there, so thanks for giving us some early time today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, anytime, Brian.
Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. See you tomorrow.